Blog Talk Radio.
And now it's time to play out loud. It's the Tony Lane Show.
Welcome here to another action-packed edition of the Tony Lane Show. And, of course, reminding you to log on to TonyLaneShow.com, blogtalkradio.com/TonyLaneShow. That's the destination show live. And, of course, TonyLaneShow.com. Where you can hear all the archived shows.
Almost one a year. One every day for a whole year.
Absolutely.
So close.
And, of course, subscribe to the show on iTunes and on Google Play. As a lot of controversy continuing in the WWE. Now, post-pay-per-view. I mean, now with the network, you get, like, a pay-per-view, like, every other week or pretty often.
I think it does work out to every other week or like, at least once every 3 weeks. Sometimes there's two within a four-week period. So it really is almost every other week.
Right, because next week, TLC.
Mm-hmm.
And last week, of course, was the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
Where Shane O'Mac once again tried to kill himself.
Holy shit, that match was crazy.
Jumping off the top of the cage. I mean, now we know why they made the match a Hell in a Cell and a False Count Anywhere. Because that was some controversy.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they were like, why would you mix two gimmick matches together? But now it makes sense because they knew what the finish was going to be, and it just wouldn't make sense after Shane took that crazy bump to drag him back into the cell for the pin, so they had to make it where he can pin him outside the cage.
Well, you mean Zane can drag him on top of him.
Right, right. And if it was a regular cell, they would have had to climb back into the ring, back in the cell,
right,
and back in the ring to do it. So,
mm-hmm,
now it makes sense knowing what the finish was. But,
right,
you know, going into it, it was a little bit – they were kind of giving away that they're definitely going to get out of the cage, which we know probably – I don't know what the percentage is, so I don't want to start lying.
But most of the time, it's pretty often.
Right.
Pretty often.
Quite often. I would agree.
And, you know, the thing at this point is, like, when you watch those matches, it's like you expect it. You expect them to wrestle on top of the ring. You expect at least one high spot off the top of the cage. It's like, you know, but
right.
I was cringing watching this last one, that Shane O'Mac and Kevin Owens match.
Oh, I mean, a lot of people thought, you know, myself included, that something catastrophic was going to happen.
Oh, I
cage was going to break, and
that cage was on the precipice of collapsing type thing. Like, I was holding my breath every time they would, like, body slam each other. I was like, holy shit. I was like, I just kept seeing Mankind going through it. And
well,
it's
and
like,
they
ugh.
Did the pop-up power bomb too on top.
Yes.
Could you imagine if that damn cage would have broke, Shane would have been gone.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There would have been no coming back from that.
And I think they were on the same like section of the cage
that Mankind went through.
So they were like in the same partition.
Mm-hmm.
So if it would have broken and Shane went through, Kevin Owens would have went through also.
Yes.
Wasn't like when, you know, Undertaker and Mankind, when he choke slammed and Undertaker was on a separate section of the cage. So when he slammed Mankind, that part gave way. He didn't fall, but Mankind went through.
Mm-hmm.
But,
the metal was bending so bad. I was like, oh my God.
They definitely reinforced the cage.
Well,
there was no doubt there.
You're not supposed to fall through the top. Like, they've always repeatedly say that. Like, Mankind going through it was a 100% fluke. You are not supposed to be able to break through the top of that for safety reasons, like serious safety reasons, obviously.
Right.
So, like, look at how heavy those two are. I was like, this thing must be so reinforced, but you never know. I mean, the one that Mankind went through was reinforced. It was supposed to be able to take that type of hit or bump or, you know, that type of stress and not give. And it gave anyway. So it's like, you know, I was like holding every time they were doing stuff on top of there. Cause it's like at any moment there can really be a serious accident.
I think that they can, like, super I think they're way more cautious after the Mankind thing.
Oh, I'm absolutely sure. But still, you never know.
You do never know, right. Accidents happen. And all it takes is one fuck up and, you know, you're the boss's son
dead.
Catastrophic accident. Right, after surviving a helicopter crash.
Yeah.
Crashing through a cell. Doing a wrestling match. That would be a hell of a way to go.
Yeah.
But all in all, it was a decent pay-per-view. I think the best match was probably the Tag Team Championship match.
It was a very good one.
Which, two pay-per-views in a row, because the last Raw show, the Tag Team match was the best match of the show.
It was.
And once again, Tag Team match is the best match with the Usos and the New Day. You know, everything else pretty much standard fare for the pay-per-view. I'm shocked that they're still keeping the belt on Jinder Mahal. And, you know, he beat Nakamura clean. I guess the Singh brothers still interfered.
They did. Everybody's like, oh, it was clean, it was clean. No, not really. Because they had interrupted and they had done their damage, so to speak. So, no, it wasn't clean per se. They just weren't in the immediate vicinity.
Right. They had gotten ejected.
Correct.
And then when the whole finish happened. But they really haven't made Nakamura look really strong in his time on the main roster. Like, he looked a lot better at NXT than the way they presented him. Here. And once again, this brings to mind how a lot of the NXT alumnus, if you will, are not presented necessarily as good as they were in NXT. Now, there are some exceptions, obviously.
Yes.
But there is a huge number of individuals that just, for whatever reason, they just don't book them as strong, which is why I'm a bit concerned. And next week's pay-per-view with the debut of Asuka, how are they going to present Asuka? I mean, we've already said Asuka is not the typical type of woman that they've pushed on the main roster.
Right.
You know, over the past several years, even with this so-called women's revolution, they have still kind of booked the more attractive women on top. I mean, Alexa Bliss is a very nice looking woman, and Sasha Banks and Charlotte Flair. You know, they haven't really put, not saying that Asuka's not attractive, but Asuka's certainly a different look than what they've booked and pushed over the past several years. You know, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, she's, but she's what a wrestler should look like. So, like, you know, you're seeing a real female wrestler.
Right.
Like, it's, you know how that aggravates me. I think it aggravates the both of us. But, you know, I think it'll be refreshing. I'm just hoping they don't screw her over.
I mean, one thing that's not cool, and as I predicted, Emma didn't take the pin at the last pay-per-view because they wanted to feed her to Asuka, and sure enough, that's what happened. They even had a fatal five-way on Raw to determine who was going to be Asuka's opponent at the pay-per-view. And, of course, Emma wasn't winning any other matches, but all of a sudden she wins and pins Sasha Banks, of all people.
Yeah.
Just so they can just have Asuka destroy her at the pay-per-view. So that's going to happen. She's still screwing over my girl, Emma. I don't like that.
No, I don't like it either. Don't like it at all.
And I guess since we're talking about the women, would you agree? I mean, this supposedly this women's revolution, and they have done a hell of a lot better than they used to, but to be honest. But there's still a long ways because now, I don't know, maybe it's me, but this storyline I find a little bit odd, especially considering you're supposed to be the, you know, all for the women now with this so-called women's revolution. But the program with Alexa Bliss and Mickie James, which is all about Mickie James' age and Mickie James being the so-called old woman and this and the other. Mickie James is 38 years old.
I mean, she's our age.
John Cena, AJ Styles, Bobby Roode, number of the men are well over 38 years old.
Oh, yeah, they're well into their 40s.
Yet, that's never brought up with the men.
No,
but with
never.
The women, the 38-year-old woman is being called an old lady in the program. So I'm like, how much of a like advancement have you really made if that's still a thing with the women, yet you've got men who are way older that it never even comes up? That's still a little bit on the sexy side. It might.
It is. It is.
You know, you'd never have that. Even with Undertaker and Roman Reigns, where Undertaker, you know, well into his 50s, in need of hip surgery.
It was never mentioned. No, you would never hear anything about that.
Right. Yet they built this whole storyline over, you know, the 26-year-old Alexa Bliss calling the 38-year-old Mickie James old. And Mickey's only a couple of years older than Natalya. I think Natalya's like 35 or something.
Yeah, Natalya is around 35. 35 or 36, somewhere around there. But,
yeah.
We know that's not old, but that's like a low blow. It really
right.
is a low blow.
It is.
It's hard enough with everything. You know, everything they throw at you, you have to look a certain way. Can't have any wrinkles. Aging's bad. Got to be young. Blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't need to bring that into a fantasy storyline. It's like, it's uncalled for. You don't need to do it.
Right. And that's something that I just totally, you know, just didn't get. Because I'm like, if you're supposedly so women's revolution and women are on equal footing as the men, yet you would still never do this storyline with the men.
No.
It wouldn't even come up.
Mm-mm.
Especially not a guy her age. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's like, it's just uncalled for. It really is.
Right. And the crazy thing, she just turned 38.
Mm-hmm.
Like her birthday's August 31st. So she's like barely 38. And they're just making the, you know, that's the whole storyline. So, they are going to battle it out next week for the Raw Women's Championship. So we'll see what happens there. Also, the debut of Asuka against my girl Emma, as we said. Then, in the Cruiserweight division, that's gotten crazy all of a sudden. Rumors now are circulating that Neville walked out and refused the job to Enzo Amore, which was the scheduled main event for last week's Raw. And as a result, they did a last-minute title change that, you know, wasn't originally going to happen at all, where Kalisto defeated Enzo Amore in the main event of Raw to become the new Cruiserweight champion. So that just came out of nowhere. I mean, they just put Kalisto in the Cruiserweight division like a week ago, and now all of a sudden he's a champion of the division. And the guy who pretty much dominated the Cruiserweight division for most of 2017 appears to be on his way out. Now, he is still officially under contract with WWE, but a lot of speculation that he's frustrated with his position and wants to rehabilitate his character. You know, something that you hear from a lot of people in WWE.
From what I understand, Enzo's actually pretty very well hated in the locker room, and he's been thinking that he's been being underutilized and things like that, and then they wanted to job out to Enzo. Now, so people are saying he walked out, everything like that, but there's other people that are wondering if maybe this is a cover-up, some sort of swerve story, and they're putting Neville back on the main roster to actually give him a legitimate run.
I mean, that would be nice, but once again, I mean, we talked about how some of the former NXT talent fared.
Right.
And Neville, former NXT champion. Matter of fact, he was in the main event of the first several NXT takeover events, including the first one, which was not a takeover, but NXT Arrival, where he defeated Bo Dallas to win the NXT championship. So he was pretty important on NXT. Like,
yeah.
he even was co-holder of the tag team champion. They were the first tag team champions. Then they lost the belts to the Wyatts because his original partner got hurt. And then him and Corey Graves won the tag team belts for a while. So he was actually one of the main stars when he was down in NXT. Now, I knew when they were talking about bringing him up to the main roster.
It was
going to
be tough.
And I heard them talking about proposed gimmicks for him, and they were talking about Mighty Mouse. I was like, oh no. Here they go again with this stupid shit. But, I mean, why couldn't they just bring him up as Adrian Neville, or, you know, they just wanted to use the last name, then Neville, or whatever? Why did they even think about doing a Mighty Mouse gimmick? Just because he's short and he's high flying, like, what the fuck? Like, you know.
Yeah.
And they were seriously doing it. Like, that wasn't a joke or anything. They were seriously considering him doing some sort of Mighty Mouse gimmick. And really underutilized him completely the first year or so. And then finally, he got a pretty decent push in the Cruiserweight division, but still, you know, most of his title matches were on the pre-show of pay-per-views, including WrestleMania. And I heard that on the WrestleMania Blu-ray and DVD that they released, they actually cut his match and
they did. They did.
Which he was not too happy about. Because
I can't imagine both of them are probably pissed.
And Austin Aries already left.
Yes. But, yeah, that's... So, you know, that's just... I'm sure they cut it off because Austin Aries probably left. But it's like you still have Neville on the roster. It should be on the DVD.
And that's... He's losing royalty money. By
yes,
not being on that.
Absolutely.
And they were in, you know, one of the opening matches on the show, which that is kind of messed up. Now, 205 Live, you know, as we discussed previously, it's not over. Nobody on the show is over except for Enzo.
Right.
Enzo. And, you know, I guess Neville is kind of sick of being in this cruiserweight division that is really like an afterthought.
Well, I mean, look at all he's done for it. Like, he's really raised the bar of that. Like, it was kind of a joke. And then Neville, like, really raised the bar on it. And it's, like, kind of legitimate now. It's, you know, it's looking really good. And then you're going to have him job out to Enzo. It's like,
right.
Who's not even liked. And, you know, it's, I get it. I get where he's coming from. He's put a lot of work in.
I mean, and it's bad enough that he had already lost the title to him on the pay-per-view.
Yes.
But, you know, that was because of a low blow where he gets kicked in the nuts and maybe they wanted him to beat him clean or something, which I can't see how they would possibly have Enzo beat anyone clean.
Mm-hmm.
But he might win the belt back, though, because Enzo is like 205 Live is almost becoming Enzo's show now.
Yeah.
Like, there are several segments that is just Enzo talking and then Enzo backstage talking and then, another, you know, like, they're not even having as many matches as they used to have. Like, before it was almost all wrestling matches.
Right.
Now it's like Enzo talking, then they might have a match, then more Enzo talking, then a match, more Enzo. Like, he's clearly the star because once Enzo went on the show, started watching it more, oddly
right.
enough. So we'll see where that goes. So at the pay-per-view next week, Kalisto is scheduled to defend against Enzo Amore. As of now, that is on the main show. They're going to definitely have to announce some more matches because they can't fill up a pay-per-view with what they've announced so far. Only four matches have been announced, the two women's matches, the cruiserweight match, and the main event, which is a 4-on-3 handicap TLC match with the Reunited Shield versus The Miz, Sheamus and Cesaro, and Braun Strowman. Now, this is an interesting situation. Now, you got a lot of star power there, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Obviously, the Reunited Shield was pretty over last week, but, you know, I feel the only reason why they put them together is once again to help get Roman Reigns over.
Yes.
You know, the total thing, the end game for everything they do seems to be Roman Reigns.
Yes.
And getting Roman Reigns over. So, this handicap match, you've tied up almost all of your championship, your men championships. Because Ambrose and Rollins are still the tag team champions, so they're in the match.
Mm-hmm.
Miz is your Intercontinental champion, so he's in the match. Brock Lesnar, your Universal champion, is not going to be on this pay-per-view. So all of your main male championships are not going to be defended on this pay-per-view, which is kind of weird. And a TLC match, typically, to win, you have to climb up the ladder and retrieve something. But if
yes.
no belt's on the line, what the hell are they going to pull? And it's not like a Money in the Bank where there's a briefcase up there or something. So what the hell are they climbing up the ladder to get?
Probably a flag or a banner of some sort.
I don't know.
Or
I mean,
a pendant.
Never explained fully, like, what the point of it, other than, well, the pay-per-view is TLC, so we got to have a TLC main event.
Yeah.
But they kind of didn't think this one out too well. Or at least it seems like they did.
I mean, they probably didn't.
And then the rest of the card, I mean, what are they going to do? You've got so much talent in that one match of your main guys. You know, 7 of your main stars in that one match. What are you doing the rest of the pay-per-view? Like, I don't even know what the fuck they're doing the rest of the pay-per-view.
Oh, I have no idea. And that last match, you know, is going to be something that could fall very flat and piss a lot of people off if it's not a good match.
True. True. And you know, with the injuries and the people who are out, and as I said, Lesnar not going to be there. You know, John Cena's out doing his movie. Big Show is injured. Jeff Hardy is injured. So when you really look at it in terms of main event level talent, like, who the hell is left?
Everyone's in that top match.
In that match, exactly. Except, I guess, Balor and Bray Wyatt.
No, that's
might
true.
Be the only ones. But then that's still only five matches. You still got to fill up a pay-per-view with at least seven, I would imagine.
Well, that or they could just have a lot of freaking filler.
Yeah. I mean, what are we going to get? Elias Sampson against Apollo Crews for the millionth time?
Probably.
Which is just ridiculous because Elias keeps winning. And Apollo Crews is so good.
He is.
And they just will not give this guy a break. Maybe we'll get the reveal of Sister Abigail.
Maybe.
That's been speculated. There's a lot of prospects in NXT that they feel could, in fact, be Sister Abigail. Some people even said that the returning Paige could be Sister Abigail, which I think would be, like, the most ridiculous thing, because Paige is already established as Paige, and people already
yeah.
know who she is.
People also know she is pretty screwed up in the head.
Yeah, but you can't bring her out as a different character. When
no,
back,
I know.
She has to be Paige.
Yes.
She can't be anybody else. Like, she's too known to try and make her somebody else. But, and they have enough talent there in NXT or the girls, some of the girls that they've signed from the Mae Young Classic, that they can cast one of those girls very easily to be Sister Abigail.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see where that goes. But that feud's going nowhere. I mean, that whole Finn Balor, Bray Wyatt thing is there's like no excitement to it whatsoever. And they just keep it going.
Yeah. I know.
They have nothing else to do.
Probably.
Maybe they'll book another women's match. I mean, you already got two women's matches on the show. And Sasha Banks and Bayley aren't on the card, so maybe there'll be three women's matches on the card.
That's fine. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Because you can probably throw in a women's tag team match, Banks and Bayley against Nia Jax and somebody, Alicia Fox or the returning Paige if she comes back, or Summer Rae. Like, I heard Summer Rae's cleared, but she hasn't wrestled yet.
Hmm.
But, I mean, I guess they got to do what they got to do to fill out the card. I know that.
Yeah. Well, they got work ahead of them in a week.
Right, right. And so it's a week away. So we will see what happens there. Now, after that, we go into November. The next main roster pay-per-view is going to be Survivor Series, of course, one of the big four, so it's going to be a dual-brand show with both the Raw and SmackDown performers on it, and before that will be the NXT TakeOver event, which was originally NXT TakeOver Houston and had since been renamed NXT TakeOver War Games, as they are bringing back one of the most beloved gimmick matches in the history of professional wrestling, War Games, for the first time under the WWE banner, of course, created by the legendary Dusty Rhodes. It was a staple in Jim Crockett Promotions and then
mm-hmm.
WCW. And it was always the match that everybody was like, when are they going to bring War Games after they bought WCW? And now, finally, at least in the NXT brand, War Games is back. But considering it's a PG product, will a match like War Games work in a PG product?
It was those were pretty rough matches.
The original ones were.
Yes.
Once
the
it
original
became
ones.
A WCW thing,
they
kind of
dumbed
it
down a little bit.
Right, and once I saw Hogan in War Games, I was like, oh no, it's over. With Hogan and Beefcake in War Games, it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know. But, I mean, those first War Games in the late 80s where you had Dusty and Nikita Koloff and the Road Warriors against the Four Horsemen, like, that was some violent shit.
It was very violent. Very violent. But they were looking to sell, and it was, you know, it was no holds barred.
It was, and, I mean, it, you know, the whole concept. I think that that's where they came up with the Hell in a Cell in the first place, is because the War Games was, you know, that big cage encased in two rings, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had a roof on it. And I think when they finally did do Hell in a Cell, you know, with made the structure with the roof, that's kind of what inspired it, I'm pretty sure.
I can see that. I'm not sure either, but I can definitely understand that.
And so, I mean, they haven't really played on NXT TV who the participants of the War Games will be. You know, it's out there, so some people already know, but it hasn't played on TV, so we're not going to get into it. But it's just interesting for the first time, you know, because they bought WCW back in 2001.
Right.
Decade and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time they're utilizing one of the WCW intellectual properties that they purchased on a pay-per-view of their own. I mean, except for the Great American Bash. I mean, they have used that name several times, actually.
That's true. They have.
But aside from the Great American Bash, they haven't really used anything else, and especially a gimmick match like this, which was a creation of the late, great American Dream Dusty Rhodes,
mm-hmm.
and they've never used this at all.
No,
so
ever.
This is shocking. Now, also coming up in November, some more WCW, NWA, retro stuff from WWE, as they have a scheduled house show in Greensboro, North Carolina, which was always the home of the original Starrcade, and they're doing Starrcade.
Nice.
And it's like, this Starrcade was the original big wrestling super show.
Yeah.
Preceding WrestleMania by 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
The first Starrcade actually took place in 1983 when Ric Flair defeated Harley Race in a Flair for the Gold. And the first WrestleMania didn't take place until 1985, 2 years later. So Starrcade always had a rich tradition, especially those early days. Same thing kind of like War Games. It was something that was big under Crockett. They carried it on in WCW, but they always kind of fucked it up once it was under the WCW banner. It was never quite the same as it was back under Crockett in the league.
Right, yeah.
But Starrcade was the Thanksgiving tradition. Every Thanksgiving they would have those big Starrcade shows, and then eventually McMahon started Survivor Series, which used to be right on Thanksgiving night, and they were going head-to-head for a while until McMahon started strong-arming a bit, doing some underhanded tactics, which is why I said, even though Eric Bischoff did some low shit during the Monday Night Wars, McMahon did some low shit first.
Oh, yes, he did.
Because back in the 80s, when he created Survivor Series to go up against Starrcade, he actually threatened to all of the cable providers, and at the time pay-per-view was just starting, and he threatened to pull access to WrestleMania if they carried Starrcade. So he made them only carry the Survivor Series because they wanted WrestleMania, and that was some underhanded shit.
That is.
So, I mean, Eric Bischoff did some sneaky shit during the Monday Night Wars, but McMahon, he did the same thing.
Yeah,
he did. Can't
really
feel sorry for him. And ultimately, he ended up winning the war anyway, so you really can't feel sorry for him. But, you know, I just find it interesting that they're going to bring back a long-time staple in the Crockett Promotions and WCW like Starrcade after all these years of never touching it, and now all of a sudden they're bringing back Starrcade and War Games in the same month. Like, what the hell?
Well, that's That's what they're doing. They're trying to get as much money as they can, trying to test the waters with stuff.
And I think Starrcade is sold out. And it's a house show. It's not even going to be, like, on the network or anything, which they should film. If they want to broadcast live, at least film it and play it on the network.
Yeah, I would like to see it. Like,
yeah, my boy.
You know.
Yeah. WWE Hall of Famers, Rock and Roll Express.
Ah.
Of course, were always a big part of those early Starrcades. Starrcade 85, where they defended the NWA Tag Team Championship against the Russians, Ivan and Nikita Koloff. And then in 86, they were against the Andersons for the Tag Team Championship. And I think 87, they were against the Midnight Express on the scaffold, the Skywalkers match.
Oh, God, so I remember that match.
They had some really good Starrcade matches. Of course, all those Starrcades are in their entirety on the network, so
right.
Check them out. But I'm still, like, amazed that this shit is coming back somehow.
I'm happy, but, you just never know what they're going to do with it. That's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there is an audience for it, because I think the tickets for the Starrcade show are sold out.
Okay, that's good.
And Greensboro was the host of all of the early Starrcade. I think the first two or three were in Greensboro, and then they kind of started taking it out, and they did the show in Chicago, I remember, because Chi-Town was in Chicago, obviously. And, but those were some really great. I mean, you know, just remember the I Quit match with Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard, still one of the most violent matches ever. And, I mean, there's some really good shit. Flair and Nikita, all kinds of really good stuff from those early Starrcades.
Well, that's because it literally was like the Super Bowl of wrestling at the time, especially the early ones before WrestleMania.
Yeah, it was.
Like, that was the top of the top, the best of the best.
And there was no pay-per-view, so these were actually closed-circuit shows.
Yes.
Like, back in the closed-circuit days. Like, the first WrestleMania. I think the first WrestleMania that was actually on pay-per-view was WrestleMania 3. The first two were strictly closed circuit. There may have been limited pay-per-view for two. One was all closed circuit. I know that.
Yes, one was closed circuit. Ay-ay-ay. But yeah, one was closed. The first one was definitely closed circuit. The second one, I don't remember. The third, yes, that one was on pay-per-view.
It was closed circuit also, but I think that pay-per-view was just starting to get out. Like, not everybody had it, but there, because I remember WrestleMania 3, they actually played it at my elementary school gym. Like,
did they
on closed
really?
Circuit TV, yeah.
Wow.
Like, and you were able to pay whatever the hell it was. I think it was like $15, $20, whatever it was, to go and watch it on a screen in the gym.
I had
a pretty big gym, though.
I had family members that lived up North Jersey, you know, close to the city, and they had pay-per-view available, and it was like, ooh, wow. Like, they had, like, cable and everything. It was crazy.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't think we got pay-per-view capabilities until probably WrestleMania 5, if I'm not mistaken. WrestleMania 4 and 5 were actually both, you know, in my hometown in Atlantic City where I grew up.
Yes, they were.
So, you know, but I didn't go to either one. They were, like, way expensive, and, you know.
Oh, they're always way expensive.
Yeah, but they were, like, super, super expensive. I guess because the venue was so small.
Probably.
That was one of the smallest places, but they made, you know, they made a decent amount of money. So the return of these classic pay-per-views or classic events because they're not going to be pay-per-views. Well, NXT TakeOver is kind of like a pay-per-view. But it's cool, though. I'm glad that they brought this stuff back.
I wonder what else they're going to bring back.
I wonder.
I don't know. I just, as I always say, I just hope they do it right.
They own all of the intellectual property, so they can bring back any of that shit if they want. Any pay-per-view, any event, you know, from all of those promotions, not just NWA, WCW, but AWA,
ECW, yeah,
World Class,
mm-hmm.
any of that stuff.
Ooh, that's there's a lot that they could do, but again, it's, well, one, a lot has to do with, you know, would it work in today's environment? Because let's face it, they, you know, bringing back, say, some of the more extreme ECW matches, it's like you can't be that extreme anymore. So it's kind of like, eh, and it ends up kind of just being a bust, and people are like, oh, this is crap, you know. So it's really what would work now, what they can do now. You know, things have tightened up. Rules have tightened up quite a bit since some of those matches were done.
And remember the Parade of Champions that World Class used to do?
Yeah.
That was a big show that they used to do in Texas Stadium. And they were very, very popular at the time. I mean, we know World Class eventually, the popularity dwindled and they eventually folded, but that first Parade of Champions that they did after David Von Erich passed, the one that Ric Flair lost the belt to Kerry Von Erich,
mm-hmm.
had over 43,000 people in attendance. That was a huge-ass show.
That was a huge-ass show.
I mean, like, World Class really was a big promotion.
They were a big promotion back in the day.
In their heyday. Now, it started to dwindle, you know, and you started seeing the attendance drop. I mean, you go just 4 years later, like, the first one when Kerry beat Flair was in 84, so they had 43,517 people in attendance for that in 84. Fast forward to 87, and it dwindled like hell. I mean, it was down to 5,900 fans.
Mm.
Now, that was a big fucking drop.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, they folded, what, like 2-3 years after that. But at one time, they were very hot.
Oh, yes, they were.
Just, you know, all tanked.
Mm.
But maybe they'll do that. Maybe WWE will run Texas. Well, Texas Stadium, I don't think, is there anymore.
I don't think so either. Well, they could do something in Texas.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it was demolished in 2010. So,
okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, well, they already did WrestleMania and Jerry World.
True.
But maybe they can do something else there and bring the Parade of Champions back, bring back Kevin Von Erich. You know, I mean, he's the only Von Erich living.
Right.
But I guess they can do Lacey, Carrie's daughter.
Mm-hmm. True.
She's never been in WWE. She was in TNA. She's, you know, she is a Von Erich.
Yeah, and she would be new to the WWE fans.
Yeah. But, I mean, I guess there's a lot of things they can bring back that would be kind of cool for nostalgia purposes.
They would. Again, it's just, you know, are they going to work and can they do them?
Now, you know, I've been anxiously anticipating the release of WWE 2K18, and the collector's edition was released on Friday, so I got my hands on it already. And so far I'm really enjoying it. I mean, I know it's only been a few days, but I really think they did a good job.
So what have you done in the game so far? Because I know you enjoy making your character and all that stuff. Or have you just been doing matches with superstars?
Well, day one, I had to create my core created characters, the ones that were involved in major storylines before I even carried on with anything.
Okay.
But once I got the main ones, like some of the ones that are kind of minor, I'm still working on.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just bring them in soon. But the main ones, like, some of them actually had belts, so I had to create them immediately and give them the belts that they had.
Gotcha.
So, it was just like, it's been pretty good. I mean, I did the pay-per-view, running through a lot of the TV shows and stuff like that. Huge roster. I still haven't played with everyone. I mean, I've played with a lot of people so far, though.
Right.
But they look great. I mean, they did a good job with the new character models. I mean, there is some glitches. You know, with the when they first release it, there's always some glitches that they have to patch and fix.
Yes.
I think mainly when there's a lot of multi-people matches is when you really get the most glitching. The one-on-one matches are pretty easily handled. And even the two-on-two tag matches, it's when you start getting into the six and then the eight, where it still runs fine, like there's no slowdown or anything like that, but every now and then you get some weird visual that happens, like somebody, you know, punches through somebody or they go through a rope or something.
Oh, I gotcha.
And, you know, they can patch and fix that. And there was an issue that I noticed when I tried to start an episode of SmackDown with a promo, and it kept crashing the game. And the second I removed the promo from the beginning of the show and just put a regular match there, it went through. But
gotcha.
I tried three times with the promo as the first thing, and it crashed every time until I took the promo out.
That's not good.
No, but that's something else that they need to fix.
Yes.
You know. So they will, you know. But so far, I must say the commentary team, which is new with Cole and Byron Saxton and Corey Graves, it is a lot better than it had been. And I must say it's probably the best commentary of any wrestling game. Now, that's not saying much because the commentary in wrestling games have been terrible.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
So it's not really like a great thing that this is the best commentary in a wrestling game, but
it's still an improvement.
Oh, it's a hell of an improvement. I mean,
that's good.
You do hear some repetition, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was.
Oh, it used to be so bad.
It sounds more conversational. Like they did say that they had the three of them recording their lines together as opposed to, you know, previously everybody was in separate studios and done at separate times even.
Yeah. You shouldn't be doing that for commentary. They really should work on each other.
Right. And this you can hear and it sounds conversational. It sounds like they're all together. Whereas, you know, with 2K17, for instance, Cole and Lawler had always been together, but even that sounded a little disjointed. But then when they threw JBL in, he clearly was not in the same room. Like, he didn't even sound like he was in the same room as them. Like, he sounded like he was totally somewhere different.
Right.
And now it doesn't even sound... Now it sounds more natural, where everybody...
That's good.
...is together. And the backstage environment is just huge. I mean, I haven't even really explored the whole backstage area yet, but it's pretty damn cool. I mean, you can go into the parking lot again, and you can fight on the top of cars and powerbomb somebody on the hood of a car. And
that's awesome.
Climb on the top of the WWE semis and throw somebody off the top of the semi and shit and jump off. You can do all kinds of crazy shit. So they really did a good job with the backstage area, like, it's huge now. You know, when you go back, like, when you first leave, like, the arena area and you're in the hallway, you'll see, like, the seamstress there making the costumes and stuff, and sometimes you'll see a wrestler talking to her, and then if you go down further, you'll get to the interview section, and usually it's like Renee Young standing there interviewing somebody, and then they always run away when they guys start fighting next to them and shit. It's pretty cool.
That's good.
What they've done as far as the backstage stuff, and you know, the created arena is more improved this year as well. They even have like a very indie looking arena that basically looks like a high school gym with a ring in it. And I'm like, this is so cool because it looks like it's an indie show, and you can kind of create it and do, you know, whatever you want there. And then you've got the huge arenas like WrestleMania, where you got the stadium shows and stuff like that. So a lot of variety when it comes to the arenas.
That's good. I look forward to getting it.
Yeah, it's certainly worth it. I think you'll have a good time, especially if you do content, like,
mm-hmm.
As far as, like, some people put, like, skits and different things up on the web. I don't know if you do that sort of content.
It depends on the games. I haven't taken the full step into doing it yet, but there has been a few games recently that I have been doing that with on and off. So I'm not opposed to it.
Well, you can really do a lot,
mm-hmm.
in terms of creating content, because they give you so many tools, and you never guess who's a playable character. Well, the dead giveaway, if you know who the corporate sponsors are.
Don't tell me Trump is a playable character.
No. But you can easily create him because his hair's in there.
Oh, Jesus God.
He is a WWE Hall of Famer.
No, I know he is. That's why his hair's in there.
Yeah, and I was at his induction.
Oh. Yeah, they did it in Atlantic City, right?
In New York.
In New York, okay.
Yeah. And it was the loudest boos I've ever heard in my life.
Well, you know, that happens.
I mean, you couldn't even hear what the hell he was saying. They were booing so damn loud.
That's craziness.
But it didn't come across like that on TV. Like, they muffled the boos when they played it on TV. And I'm like, that is not what it sounded like if you were sitting in there. Like, you couldn't even hear him talk.
Yeah. Well, they got to cover that shit up. They got to make themselves look good. She's on his cabinet, after all. Mrs.
Yeah,
McMahon.
So
who can you make? Trump was my only guess.
Well, the corporate sponsors are, once again, second year in a row, Snickers. So, you know, when you look up in the rafters, you see the Snickers logo.
Mm-hmm.
TheTruth.com. You'll hear Michael Cole mentioning that in the commentary about, you know, logging onto TheTruth.com about the tobacco and all that stuff. And also, KFC.
Oh, the Colonel.
Yes. Colonel Sanders himself.
I would play with him all the time just to be a jerk.
Yes. So, Colonel Sanders in the game, it was the big secret that they were trying to keep from everybody, but I think they revealed it during the pay-per-view. And I thought it was a joke first, but no, he really is in the game.
I mean, they have been doing the whatchamacallit, the KFC commercials, so...
Right, and they've had... several WWE superstars dress in Colonel attire, including Shawn Michaels and Ziggler and I think even Kurt Angle.
I think, maybe. They have a lot of people in that commercial.
Yeah.
It's like a who's who.
So you can use Colonel Harlan Sanders right there in WWE 2K. So, all in all, though, like you said, after just a few days, it's pretty cool. And once again, as I had mentioned before, the community creations. Now, this is not even everyone yet. This is just the people who purchased the deluxe edition and the collector's edition.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else, the game comes out on Tuesday.
Right.
So you're going to get flooded with content once everybody gets their hands on it. So now you just have, you know, a small percentage of the overall audience with the access to the game. And already there's tons of community creations already
Sure.
And
I'm sure.
They've done Liv Morgan. Once again, like I said, Liv Morgan, one of the more popular NXT females who was not included as actually in the game, and she's not going to be DLC. And I told you for the past few years, they've been creating her in community creations. And once again, she was one of the first characters that somebody created. And once again, they did an amazing job. I mean, literally, she even tweeted out a picture of the character that somebody created of her. It looks just like her. I mean, you literally can put the picture of her right next to that character. And it's hard to believe that that's not an actual character model from the game, that somebody created that. Like,
That's good, though. That means their character creation is really improving, because it was terrible back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Back in the day was just a nightmare. With both games.
I mean,
before the game comes out, I was doing a little reminiscing and going back to some of the old wrestling games, and it's amazing how far we've come. Because, boy, they were some stinkers in there.
Oh,
but
they were.
There were some good ones. I think back very fondly of the WCW NWO Revenge game on the N64, which was, to me, one of the best wrestling games.
That is probably one of the best wrestling games, because there has been some very crappy wrestling games, too. It's not necessarily an easy one to work the physics and mechanics out for.
That game, too, did so many firsts.
It was
amazing. It was the first time that you really had, like, them come out with a manager, like when Macho Man came out with Elizabeth and Diamond Dallas Page came out with Kimberly Page, and, you know, the NWO came out with Eric Bischoff. Like, it was, you had never seen somebody come out with a manager in a wrestling game before. And they came out with the belts, wearing the belts and all that shit. Like, it was, at the time, like, people probably look at it now and they're like, oh, well, that's nothing. But back then, that was brand new, and that was the first game to do that.
Craziness. You were like, oh my, especially the first time, you were like, oh my God, look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, because before those early wrestling games, if you won the belt in the game, you had the belt until you turned the game off.
Yeah.
When you turned it off, it went back to whoever the default champion is.
Yep. And then you fight your way back through it, you do your little thing, and then you turn it off, you start it over the next day.
Right. This was the first time that when you won the belt, you turned it off, you still had the belt.
Yep.
Until somebody beat you. And that was cool. And it was one of the biggest roster. I mean, when they add the DLC and all that, there's going to be over 200 characters on this game.
Yes.
But back then, I think that WCW NWO game had like 60-something characters, which was a whole
insane
bunch. Yeah. Back
you were
then,
lucky if you had 12.
Oh, yeah. Those
on any
games
of them back then. Yeah. Like, you got 12, maybe 16 or 18.
Right. And the one, Rage in the Cage, which was exclusive to the Sega CD, had 20, and that was the only game with 20. Everybody else, it was, like you said, 12, 8. I mean, those early NES titles, WrestleMania Challenge, and all, they had like 6 people on it.
Yeah, they did. They were very simplistic.
So we've come a long ways.
We have.
I mean,
it's still amazing.
I remember when Acclaim was trying to make those games kind of like Mortal Kombat. Do you remember In Your House?
Oh, God. With the like, real human, like, video capture animation and shit like that.
Right. Like, visually, it didn't look bad. You know, like, Yokozuna looked very Yokozuna-y. And
Yokozuna-y.
Undertaker, like, he looked like himself. Shawn Michaels, like, they all looked like themselves because it was like a real human motion captured or whatever they did, similar to Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
But it was a fighting game like Mortal Kombat. It wasn't a wrestling game. So
right.
It was kind of like, I didn't want a fighting game. I wanted a wrestling game. And you didn't fight in a ring. Like, you know, The Undertaker was like in a funeral parlor and Yokozuna was in like a sumo dojo or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, they had some chintzy backgrounds for that.
Right, it was basically like trying to put WWE in Mortal Kombat.
Yes.
And I didn't like that at all. And then when they came out with Attitude was an improvement. At least it was in a ring.
Yeah, but it was still the same premise.
The controls were.
Yeah.
It was insane. And I think they had like 40 or 50 wrestlers on there, which was a decent amount for the time. But there was 40 or 50 button configurations to do the moves. So
yeah.
It was like impossible to learn how to master every character because it was like crazy button combinations just to do the moves, and they were different for every character.
There was a circle,
square, plus, or whatever.
But there was a lot of games at the time when that came out that had that same setup for button combinations.
You needed the book, but the strategy guide. Remember that?
Yes.
All those fucking strategy guides back in the day.
For, what, $15 they were?
Yeah.
A pop?
Like, you almost couldn't have a match unless you had the strategy guide in front of you because everybody's moveset was different.
And, you know, you're trying to start out and everything, and all you're doing is mashing buttons and being like, all right, what did I hit to do that move?
Right. Yeah,
such
those,
a pain when they do that.
That was a terrible engine.
Yeah, it was not like, it just wasn't set up. They got a little too out of hand with the button combinations and everything.
Right. And then they used that same engine to make the two ECW games, the Hardcore, whatever the hell it was called, and Anarchy Rules was the second one. But
Backyard Hardcore, I think, or something like that.
Hardcore
was it?
Something. I forget the name. It wasn't a good game.
Neither of them were.
Right. I think the big selling point was probably the fact that it had ECW wrestlers on it. And it was cool to finally have a game with, you know, Sabu and, you know, the Dudleys and Rob Van Dam and all them who, at the time,
were
had
huge.
Never been to WWE. Right.
And right, but were huge on their own.
Right.
Those games were not good.
No, because it used that same stupid engine that Acclaim had, which was, like, the worst wrestling engine ever. And, you know, then when those N64 games came out and THQ was putting out those WCW games, that was it. Like, that was best shit. And then WWE knew that was the better game, and they quickly hooked up with THQ.
Yes, they did.
While WCW went with Electronic Arts. EA Sports was supposed to make a WCW game. I think they did release one, Mayhem, if I'm not mistaken, which was terrible. It was on the first PlayStation, if I'm not mistaken. They were working on Backstage Assault, which was going to be all backstage fighting. And didn't
yes, I remember them working on that one.
And that one never came out.
No, it didn't. I was actually, like, kind of interested in that one because I was like, ooh, it's all, like, backstage. That's a different angle on it. And then they fucking canceled it. And it's like, really? Really?
Yeah, that, Mayhem did come out, and that was EA Sport. And that was just awful. Like, the visuals on that was terrible.
Well, I mean, like I said, there's been a lot of bad wrestling games.
And EA, they've got the UFC license now, and they haven't really done, especially when you compare what THQ did with the UFC license, EA has not really delivered a really good UFC game yet. Because that damn one that was on the THQ did, Undisputed, whatever, UFC Undisputed.
Right.
That was a good game.
It was. The ones from EA, it's like, talk about button combinations and stuff like that. Like, it's insane. It just doesn't feel smooth.
Right, they almost overcomplicated it.
Yes. That's a very good way of explaining it.
Especially, like, the submission game. It's, like, so difficult to navigate the controls in the submission that you almost don't even want to do that.
Yeah.
And that's a big component of MMA.
It is. It is. It's very hard, very steep learning curve. You do not enjoy that game at first because it is that hard to handle and figure out and get your way through.
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrible. I guess they've got deep pockets, so they get those licenses.
They do.
They don't deliver with them, but they...
No. But they have those licenses.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
And I guess, people buy the games.
I bought it. I bought them. And was horribly disappointed. Yeah, nobody buys FIFA.
Well, internationally, FIFA's pretty big.
Well, yes, FIFA is huge internationally. Here, I mean, I've watched it pick up steam here, but I remember, like, years ago, you said, if you picked up FIFA, people were like, FIFA? I'm like, what the hell?
They actually do that pretty good, like, compared to some of the other sports. And I know, the whole, if it's in the game, it's in the game. That was their whole logo or slogan before. And they really, really can say that with FIFA. Some of their other games, they kind of missed the mark a bit.
No,
especially
FIFA's
like
actually been good for a while. They did good on FIFA. They've been doing good on FIFA for years. It's everything else they're a failure at.
I mean, I heard, and I never played it myself, but I heard good things about the boxing game, whatever the hell it was called. Fight Night, was that it?
It was good. But again, there was button combinations with that one, too, because I own the Fight Nights. There were button combinations with that too and everything like that, but they weren't nearly as complex as the UFC ones, and it was done well. Playing online was awesome.
I like a good boxing game.
They did a good job on those games. I do have to say, I was pleased with those games.
So that's two sports they did right.
Little bit of a learning curve. Again, you got to learn like your button combos. And, your weight and stuff like that. But overall, a good game.
Yeah. But, I mean, they can't get basketball together. Football.
No.
Football, I guess it's serviceable, but, it's still not what it should be.
Yes, it's not nearly what it should be.
Right. But we'll see. I mean, obviously now we're in a season where all the good games come out. Finally, I see that South Park game is coming out, like, this week, I think. And I had saw a preview of it last year at the New York Comic Con. And I thought it was out already. I'm, like, amazed that it's just coming out next week. And I'm like, damn, that shit isn't out yet? Because,
Well, it takes years to develop games.
It looked finished, at least the thing they showed it, but I guess it was only one level.
A lot of times they'll make one workable level, or it's a tech demo, pretty much, of
right.
what's possible and what they can do, and then, if it's good, then they go from there and start building the actual game. But a lot of times that's all they have. All their work's just gone into that.
And they were strict with that. Like, they had actually built, like, a little house on the show floor, and, like, they were carding you to get in because the game's explicit. They weren't let little kids in.
It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Like, they couldn't even see the game. Like, you were literally in this little house playing the game. It was
That's
cool,
awesome.
Though, because it was like a little South Park house.
That's cool.
But I was like, what the hell? What do they got, booze in there? Why are they carding people?
Yeah.
And it was just a game.
Well, I mean, it is explicit, so.
Yeah. But, so, interesting things coming up as, you know, holiday season. This is when all the cool games come out. So, you know, we'll definitely get into some cool games discussions. But next week's TLC pay-per-view, so we'll see what happens there. So,
should be interesting. I'm interested to see the match, the final match. We'll see.
Right, right. I want to see how they fill up this this card, too.
Yes.
Yeah. So right now you got four matches. I'm like, got to fill up this pay-per-view a little more. But that's it for us this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Remember, log on to TonyLaneShow.com, blogtalkradio.com/TonyLaneShow, and, of course, subscribe to the show in iTunes and on Google Play. So for Maris, I am Tony Lane, and we will see you next week.
Think Out Loud, the Tony Lane Show.
What kind of world are we living in that this is considered entertainment?
TonyLaneShow.com.